Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about podcasts while walking, practical projects update. So just to give you an idea, I've launched on a series of practical projects which I can make involve sort of elements of advanced science that I know of and can't communicate. So I've never been, you know, advanced science, no one has been able to communicate outright. Folded into that is cognitive rebuild. So you have something that you have done, it's there, it's not conceptual, wiffle waffle, it's not relying on someone's program or goodwill of an employer or anything like that. It's a concrete project which is out there, and in its demonstration you can pick up and learn what's going on. And indeed, I was speaking to a few other people in a fairly similar situation to what I am, and I've now sort of realized very much in terms of speaking to people, if once you over their cognitive load, you switch off. So, you know, and I don't know whether this necessarily stroke people as well. It might be people in general, but I noticed that they've got the same sort of thing of calm things down, do a strategy over and over, and trying to get some feedbacks and work out what's going on. And so I've seen that a number of times, and looking back, that's precisely what I've done, is I better do this, I better work on podcasting, for instance. And so slowly develop up skills, slowly develop software, crash through the software, then bit by bit work about. So I'll work about building an audience. I just can't really get to FeedBlitz and FeedBurner to know that next stage. I've really got no one in my contacts for you to work out how to do it. But in terms of the actual software and podcasting, that's very, very stable now. The actual machines are reliable, and I've sort of problem solved bit by bit. So I have this microphone, and I've actually got it clipped to my reading glasses, so I no longer have the problem. Not my reading glasses on in front of me, but hooked to my shirt is the reading glasses, and hooked to that is the microphone. So I no longer have the issue of the microphone clicking against my reading glasses, because it's actually clicked there, and it's nicely suspended away from my clothing, so there's not the rustle. But sort of getting back to it, the general theory is that if I can work just quietly away solving problems, and I was reading a book of called Atomic Habits, and it's about this person who's had this massive brain damage and is just working on everything at 1% improvement the entire time. And that's very much here, and sort of like if you have a problem like this, you get set back, and the issue of attacking a problem systematically and having the get up and go to keep on fighting at it is essentially what a research scientist does anyway. So for me, it's apply yourself to the problem, look at the resources, and keep on making improvements on it. And the Podomation software is relatively, well, it's stable. Won't declare it quite stable. It's possibly just one finesse I might do to it and stabilize it a little bit more. These projects coming up, I've essentially applied the 1% improvement over and over again, and just narrowing down on it. Now, the first project is the Einstein to Haas project. So there are three projects in play, and I'm prepared to take as many months and as slowly as to get it across. And for this, it's a outstanding success. Like when I first switched it on, I was really prepared to get my microscope to see the tiny little jilt there. But having made it, I suppose, badly and improved it, I sort of know what the possible things are here. So what you have is you have basically a ceramic with electrons which can have their spin changed. And so this is basically, typically I think Einstein did it with an iron bar, but an iron has, you know, huge coefficient. But ferrite is very good. So ferrite is sort of like the modern magnetic material alternative to iron. So it moves away from iron cores. All the little transformers worth of anything a tiny little ferrite jobs. And ferrite's made out of basically a sintered clay of iron oxide and zinc or strontium. Looking up, you can get various ones. Of course, in this, I'm not a design lab. I don't have the ability to phone up and order in the best and the top. I can only basically buy a ferrite rod. So you can hear the noises I'm going for my walk. Hopefully it won't be too loud as we're walking along. So I don't have a lot, but I can do various things. And particularly I bought this long ferrite rod from a place called Jacar, and I've been looking up ferrite, and it's actually rather difficult to get long ferrite rods like that. And you think, oh, I think, well, how I might advance, get an even longer rod. The longer the rod, the better. You know, when you do the maths of it, but you can do the maths in your head, basically. The longer the rod is, the amount of kick is proportional to the volume. Okay, so you've got something, magnetic field, kicking the volume, and the magnetic field that you generate, you can generate a lot of field and only use a little bit of, or you can generate a long, long length of magnetic field, which is not much extra effort, and that's channeled down your ferrite. So a long rod sort of has the advantage of actually sucking up the field and organizing everything for you. Also, a long, shallow rod, the moment of inertia is mr squared, mr for the moment, and then you integrate the r squared up along there. And so a thin rod has a tiny moment of inertia, so that its entire kick gets into angular acceleration. So it's F equals MA, and so the torque equals the moment of inertia times the acceleration. So it's much better to do here. I'm just going off here. I'll be back with you in a short while. So basically, what do I have? I've basically got my shed for inspiration for old bits and pieces. So fortunately, I've worked in a robotics company or owned a robotics company and worked in Nortel and stuff like that. So I've got sort of the basic bits of aluminium block for making up rigs. I've got tiny little fragments there, and you're looking at there, and you've got lots of time, so you can just keep on thinking, making up the aluminium rig. So essentially the first version was just a rod with a cross at the bottom, and then that's moved to a T at the bottom, and shortest of rods going up, two rods, one going up to support the ferrite rod on the ferrite rod on some cotton. I'll go into that in a little bit of a while, because I've been fooling around with a little bit of small amount of fencing wire I've got left. Really, this is low grade wire, and winding up a series of springs, because it's going to be a torsion one, and you've got something which is with a very low moment of inertia. You want a very low torque in your torsion pendulum. So a torsion pendulum is basically a weight dangling on a string. Now, the problem of a weight dangling on a string is that it's naturally got a pendulum, a normal pendulum side-to-side mode, and then it's got and if you've got a fixed rod on that, that has got a whole bit of jiggling modes. So with this, I put it together slowly, and this is pretty much speaking with other people in similar situation to me, and they say are fixing a door, and that will take them a week of just quietly working away at it. So there's sort of a similar thing for me, working away at it. Made up the coils, and you've only got one length of copper, so you wind it up, and you've only got so many spindles, so you don't have a huge design range. Second one, you can't just get a design drawing and specify and get a machinist to build it and charge you for it. You just have to build what's up there. Sorry. It's basically essentially big built, and essentially I went through various things. Now the key thing is to have this graphite rod. I think it's 100 millimeters long easily, or 8 millimeters by 90 millimeters, I think is the standard thing looking through the catalogues. It's got two flat surfaces on it, so it's a circle with flats on top and bottom, and the key here is that if you've got it dangling, it will just sort of jump all over places. It's something very light. You want to hold it on a light torch thing, so it's a recipe for something to dance around. Now, watching other people, I haven't gone for this one, is have an anchor. Basically have a anchor point at the bottom, go up through it, and it's basically a part of a string from the top to the bottom of your apparatus. It's not a fully floating pendulum. It's basically on a string up to bottom, and again, I've got no machine tools, and furthermore, I don't think I'll ever get access to them. I had one where I was just playing around with a scalp blade, and it cut me, and it took a day or so to. But yeah, really a day to stop bleeding. Sort of like it stopped oozing after about 4 hours, and you go, oh my god, we're going to have to stop, not do anything. It's sort of a bit of a wake-up call. I still have it here. Little cut. Your pendulum is not the standard pendulum that you see where it's just hanging down. Because it's so light and such a good form factor, you have to anchor it at the bottom. And the ways of attaching it. And obviously I go to the shed for inspiration, and I can see geometric designs with bits of cotton you can tie up and ways you can tie up the cotton, such as, okay, and I think the last one I showed is a one where the cotton's encased in aluminium foil. The whole thing's an aluminium foil rod. Looks like a piece of aluminium foil. And last showing of it on the internet is that But then I was hanging up the washing and I saw the pig and looked at the structure of pigs, and lo and behold, the pig is an ideal holder in terms of its symmetric. It's got geometrical stops on it. It's all fantastic, and so I do have a closed pig at the bottom and at the top holding this up, and it works an absolute treat. Like, it does spin up faster than I can possibly believe, and I've been just systematically removing any possible things that... So this little rod, you flip the magnetic field. Now, I've got the magnetic field. I was originally going to flip it with a relay, and then I built a 555 timing circuit. But this was unspeakably poor engineering sold by JKR's kit. It was sort of good in terms of got me out with soldering iron and tricking my hands are steady and all this type of stuff. But as something, it worked for a little while, stopped working, but the clicking was irregular. You could actually hear it was irregular, and absolute nightmare material. And so I had to bite the bullet, and I've been reading about Arduino, and just had to buy the board and a relay, a bank of four single pole relays, which I've configured to to orient. Now, I'll just it's going into my head. How is it doing? But it's actually not a bank of four double pole relays, and I've wired it up to the Arduino, and as you go along, you realise, not only are the I'm more advanced in terms of electronics and understand technology than the teachers and the school system, but even then, I'm now 10, 15 years out of date. And how do you actually connect from these PCB board connectors? And the answer is that you can just buy packets of, 150 of these assorted connectors. This is from one wire to the other. It's 300 of these little things for $7 or something like that. And it's a big wake-up call. And it's sort of like no amount of research can help you if you've actually got to build this sort of stuff. And so this works exceptionally well. And indeed, the clothes pegs are there. And it's really good working on 1%. And the only next thing in this project is to get the solid-state relay. Because there's a symmetry argument in that if you have something, a ferrite rod in a magnetic field, and you just change the magnetic field, the ferrite rod will reoriented in what, picoseconds? Much smaller time frame for it can possibly respond, and by symmetry you can't get a torque. It is possible, and it has been possible, to get a torque where the ferrite rod is off axis, and it will rotate off axis into higher field. Now, I know this, and the thing is that from switching, the field has to change from switching, And so it does switch. There is a small dead time, and that dead time's a few milliseconds, I would expect, or 50 milliseconds, something like that. And I can really cut that down with the solid state. So hopefully I'll get the solid state tomorrow. Be nice and quiet. Makes a clicking sound, which is a bit of a bother giveaway in terms of. Now, bear in mind, this is sort of breakout stuff. Family people around are very skeptical, and they're very concerned about me using electricity and all this type of stuff. I'm sort of charging ahead, and so what I do is I set it running and I film it running back and forth, and take the film across, put it into Camstasia, then count the number of frames and seconds and frames for a full oscillation, and do that for about 10 oscillations, and then put it in an Excel curve, fit it, then put that number back into the oscillation. Now, there's something a bit funny going on. I haven't quite worked out what it is. But when the field is on, it's got just a fraction different frequency. Can't quite work out what it is. But it works a hoot. And so what this is, what I have to do is build it and make it robust for transport. Now, it's pretty robust for transport at the moment. When I was taking it around to a friend's place, it was much bigger, and you can bump it, and the solenoids are just killed in with a rubber band. So there's a few things which are a little bit weak, so I'll just have to work on that and solidify it up, and then build it, and then I suppose have a PR person, a PR person to develop it, because indeed I've sort of worked on it, just very, you know, sort of surveyed the field, picked the experiment, done some little bit of maths to the designer, and built it, put it together, and it's the first in this series of experiments. So if I have a piece of ceramic in an oscillating magnetic field, should it start to go left to right, left to right, left to right? Now, in your school physics, the answer is no. Now, the thing is to actually hold it and pitch it beyond, because often, I really know the drill is that, this is a much better way of doing it. This is out of date. We've always taught it out of date. People are happy out of date. No one gets hurt with being out of date. No one gets. So I know that I've got to preserve it and develop it forward. And the idea behind this is that once I've got a generic strategy of building something, I should continue doing it. So the second one, I call that Richie policy. So this is after someone who had to crack a scientific scene by predicting eclipses and working through, and sort of burning through, penetrating, slowly gaining information, sort of from, I can imagine someone in a graveyard, but all the bodies have been shot and put away, and you've got to get up out of the graveyard and slowly scoop the dirt away and slowly move without being detected. So this is the De Haas, or Ricci 1, Ricci 2. So Matteo Ricci is my sort of strategic inspiration to you, is the Thompson effect experiment. And here is something very profound. Here is a wire heated in the center, and as I put a current through it, it cools and heats left and right. And initially you think, all I need to do is detect, it's easy enough, I just get a wire, get some current through it, and then you go, the effect will be proportional to the current density. So if I get a big rod, I need a big amount of current, and that's a big amount, big. So the idea is to make it as small as possible. And then a heat source, what I've done is I've got some wire, and then I've coiled it up, and I know that what happens is that if you have a little coil, it retains the heat. The heat increases the resistance, and you get a runaway effect. So you're sort of current limited. So you don't want to make it too big. You want to make it roughly. And so I've gone for, I feel I could have gone for 6 turns. So this is all the so in my front of my head, the sort of front desk, I know certain things, have other things going on. So I know that basically go up. And then, temperature source, how do you read it? Someone reads a thermocouple with degrees, but the problem is that if you do something really small and you've got a thermocouple, that really mucks up what's going on. It's very difficult to do. And it takes a while to actually process and to know this is not demonstrated. So the idea here is to measure the differential expansion. So the cooling side won't expand as much as the heating side. If it's only a few degrees, you might just see it. You know, this is going to be a real tough thing. Now, in all ideas is to get the concept up and running. I don't really expect to see it. So I've got these two lines producing up. Now, I can't have the wires too close together because they'll arc and it's difficult. So what I do is I have the wires come out a distance. Now, the thing is that the longer the wire, so I've got the heat source and the cool source, so the gradient. So the longer the wire, where the temperature effect is the most great to try and get this up. So I have the coil and the wires come back parallel, and I sort of woke up in a dream. I said, oh, I haven't done this right. I then looked at it, and amazingly I had actually wound it absolutely correctly, and then winds out parallel and then goes into in and out again, bent in and out, these two little feet. And you can see the two little feet under a microscope. And I no longer need the microscope for Ritchie 1, this is for Ritchie 2. And so I can build it. So how do you get the microscope on top? And then going out from these feet, I have the wires go down at 45 degrees and coil onto a piece of tent pole I found on the ground, and wind up along this. And this means that the wire as it expands, if it's held more securely at the feet will stay the same, and the wire at the top will change angle. And it may well do that because it's hot and soft, but the idea is that you have this here such that there's a long cool wire going down at 45 degrees, a little distance to this coil stuff, so they're held held there. And the constraint of it is that it's like hinged on this thing all the way down, and so the two feet can actually automatically do it. Now, before I used to be able to write out in maths and come up with a solution, I just have to now wing it. Like I produce one prototype and so I then put this in a little plastic shot glass, and I have all these shot glass supplies I have from teaching. For the shot glasses, I would teach fossils by getting people to set things in resin. It's just a living thing, and they'd do it in a shot glass, put the resin in a shot glass and have a look at what's going on. So I have these shot glasses, these plastic shot glasses, put this in here, I did initially have water, but the water, the voltage in the water meant that one side went a bit rusty, so I had to put some oil in it, and I'd like to, there's sort of special electrical oil, but I just have to put some cooling oil to start off with in it, so that's pretty yucky. And so I have to set all this up, and I have to have a microscope which can be just placed on top of it, and I've got to be able to have the current change. And so I have this throw switch, and so this is a 2-bar pole switch, and so underneath it I was crossing the pole. The power comes out through the wires through the actual handle, so if the handle clicks one section towards you, it's one way. It goes underneath the pole switch, reversing it to the other way. Now, this is where I sat in the shed and unscrewing and poof, little screw, I've lost it, and I was going, oh crap. But it so turned out that the little skewering screw which I'd lost, I really actually didn't need, because I was wiring it underneath, so I only need to wire it in for one side. So I've got that coming up, and I've got these document case holders, one for the experiment and one for the microscope. And you just lob the microscope on top, and so I've got that all very going down, but unfortunately I can't use any tools on it. So this is a distance away, and you know, will it work? It's something that's really, I don't know. It was like, I wasn't really sure whether the Einstein de Haas experiment would work. The next, so that's Ritchie 2, and that's probably a week away. Then Ritchie 3. So, you know, what's going on? How come this person's... Well, first thing I have to say is I've cut off from options. I don't have work saying, here, welcome back. Let you work and develop and get back. I've really got to go my own device. And it does sound, oh, I've got this big sophisticated plan, but it's really the same plan. Same process, producing three options and then following each option with the same path through it. So it looks complicated, three different things, but the three different things are just to cover off. So when one's going slow, I can work on the other. So, and this is essentially what's going on. I've got to be slow while someone cuts something up. I can't do it all the way. And Ritchie 3 is going forward, and I can slow that down and actually wait for listening. So Ritchie 3 is building a 1 trillion scale model galaxy on the surface of the planet. And there's going very forward. There's things that you can do, like advance the idea of the petameter. That'll break it up into little bits. The petameter versus the light year. 9.4 petameters equals a light year. end of story. So makes it rather simple. And then petameter to kilometer, we're going to make a kilometer equal to a petameter. And so the size this much and this much, and it does allow you to go a certain distance. Now, as it goes, when you knock on doors, you get no answer. Now, this knocking on doors, no answer, is something that my stroke buddies talk about. Oh, so notice this, or have you thought of the, I've said, hang on, if you lose something, we live in a capitalist economy, we can just buy more of them. And this person's, this wife chipped in, he's bought 14 toothpastes. It's driving me crazy, and this type of stuff. And I must admit, I have that for, well, I think I've bought 4 pairs of glasses around the place, but I've now stabilized it, and just basically ended up having all the automation software pick and take things out. So I've gone forward, and your communication style with people in America, if you contain incorrect information or colloquial information, they shut up shop really quickly. And so that being said, there was a, I wanted to put Western, and I miscalculated and found up Shelbyville came up, said yes, and then I had to put another star in for Shelbyville, but alas, they've in the world, they want everything prepackaged for them. What's been going forward is that I put in just a note to University of Illinois and their high school, and their high school just got back to me today, and then I've written you right up, and so I've written a base story trying to explain what's going on, and I've given a copy of that to a communications person who's looking at my communication style. And but this stage, for this project, we've got the model sun to go into Glenbrook. And it's a very simple thing, but I haven't approached anyone yet until I've done all the homework, and so I've got the things going forward, and so I've got a few positive bites. Astronomer at Large says big thumbs up, this is the way to go, but on your way you look to be doing a nice job, you don't need my help. And the Australian Space Agency, love it. Oh, we don't endorse or help anybody. Right, so they're the Australian Space Agency trying to grow space in Australia, but in a way that doesn't actually help any Australian industry or any, which is quite understandable because it's just mad guys in, like me, all over the place. So I sort of understand it. But building it up, so we've got the Americans coming back, and using my sort of research, I've developed a Star Wars theme story, and I've put it there, and I've developed that and shown it to a sympathetic friend. But part of my policy is you show once, leave once, and then just leave to incubate. So if they're interested, they'll get back to you. But for that, I developed the S and B. B is bigger, S for smaller, and the number of factors that you go on. And so for B22, I have the pancake universe. So this is all trying to build it all in together. And Heston is the person that I better get back soon. I'll get into heaps of trouble. Oh, sheepies. Heston is the person. Now, the interesting thing is that I've used his image and the pancake recipe. I've shot an email off to him, and so, what is it? Well, they haven't come back to me. The marketing company, the people in marketing are not dumb, but they know what they're doing so well. Like, I respect them, but if they can't communicate with you, that's because they perceive a communication problem which they have to steer away from. It's sort of like that, but the advantage in this case is that I can use Heston, is the name, yeah? Heston Blumenfield, or whatever his name is. I can say, well, I'm in communication with, I've kicked the ball, I've kicked the process forward. So I've got all these things just brewing. So I do have Richie 1 up and running, Richie 2 ready to go, Richie 3 go, and then I have the next generation of stuff, which is essentially a tabletop $30 chemistry safe, kid safe chemistry set, which does, yeah, you do an acid base, the first thing you get out of an acid base is a full concentration titration. Why not? You know, why not stick it to them? Why not really, really nobble it? And so, for that, that's just, so once I've got, Richie 1 is, I can start to build this. And I don't know quite how I'll do it, but, and that's a tour de force to, I don't know whether I really want, you really have to, at this stage, go onto Raspberry Pi. The Arduino is just the most insane bottleneck, punching information in the most insane, stupid way into it. You know, it's much, Arduino really is, I don't know, it's more advanced, it's got all the sexy thing it is, but it's really, compared to Raspberry, I don't know how I can get at Raspberry. The advantage is that Arduino is a tenth the cost of Raspberry Pi, and once you build it, I don't know, there's enough memory in it to actually just have a switch, a press switch, and you click it through, and it's a motor operation. It's you can do it for titration, or do it for circuit analysis, and the circuit analysis of the of old, the way we do it, has to go. It is unsustainable, and the fundamental thing is that the Arduino has, I don't know, I was going to say 4 or 5, 8 ADs, converters, readers, and outputs, and I don't know why you want an output, but so that means basically you can get the voltage at 8 points in a circuit. End of story. And you can just say the voltage is read here and here, and you automatically get potential difference. You can just steer your way through. So you have a circuit, and I was just trying to think, there's just heaps of ways of doing it, but for $10, which is the cost of an ammeter, you can buy Arduino and have it there. And then I was trying to look at the Bluetooth to the phone. You can measure the circuits, just in terms of cognitive load and describing what's going on. And your voltmeter, you just have to put a voltmeter across a shunt resistor. You just have shunt resistors there. Easy enough to do. And the Arduino plugs are just much better. So it's the way to go. So that I'll see if I can get Richie 1, 2, and 3. So 1's done. 2, I've done the calculation. I think you might just be able to see the effect under the microscope in terms of the temperature difference. So essentially you've got a heat source and cooling source giving you your net temperature, and essentially I think going small, my sort of back of the head calculations is surely I'll be able to see it, but at least it's a sort of a concept thing to go ahead. Now the process is then to move to the next stage of a semi-private uni showing. It's quite uni showing at some stage, and then possibly even an evening thing. I think that's an evening social thing. Might do it. I would like to see whether I can pull it off, and then as a small step, because there's no end game. You can only just incrementally improve it. So you get an incremental overview of it. So yes, it's really no end game, but sort of just improving the understanding of it, the impact of it, publishing it, and just moving on. And at some stages it's you've got to be able to break through. So I just, but if I can say again, all the other guys in a similar situation have got the same behaviour problems of just settling down, solving a problem, one problem at a time, just pushing it through. The same sort of emotion, sort of like the sheer guts and isolation to keep going. You just have to be really guts to get going, and no clear end game for it in terms of, and really people, I think, this is at the end of the story, that people themselves who are doing this silly stuff themselves don't have a clear end game. They have this vague, waffly, this is why they have a zero-sum game, because they don't have an end game. They only have a game where everyone else has to lose, therefore they have to win. If you've got a fraction of society like that and you fall down, you get far more exposed to your local social environment, end game, and the the push forward. And so I think it's very much there. Again, for the Ritchie 1, which is the Einstein to Hass experiment, I've got to slowly engineer it up such that it's transportable. Oh, crap. Sorry. I just walked through a pretty hard spider web. And the problem is that it's not on the louder the spider web. You go through a spider web. It's like this time of the evening, you can hear it. Oh, it's got bits on there. The more heavy it is, the bigger the spider is. And, it'll be a pretty big spider. I don't think it's going to be an orb spider. The other thing is, I get told to come in and remove the various spiders. You can't kill the spiders, so some spiders, if you know they're not dangerous, you can just pull up by the back legs and then throw them away. But of course, the difficult thing is, I found today throwing them away, putting your hand in your, you blow it like that, and you walk on and you just see this little guy. It's laid a web spindle onto you and it's hanging off your finger, so it's slowly coming up again. So it's but these are microscopic guys, 3 millimeters across, so garden hunting spiders that's come inside. That one is a night catching spiders. In general, I have not, a few years ago the place was crawling with this fairly lethal funnel web spiders, but a net is unpleasant, right? Yeah, a web up the top is unpleasant, but those spiders are catching insects, and you little to worry about. It's the one underneath logs, the ones with the redback or black widow spiders are the difficult ones to worry about. So if I don't get killed, I've just got to then move this up to the next level and slowly maneuver this forward such that it can go through. Like the doors are closed, the opportunities have gone within the environment. So I've got to really pick these experiments up to go X environment and try and fashion the way through. There is really no major pushing through. I don't know if that makes sense. So I've just got to really, the beauty of these experiments is not at all push down people's throats. It's to share with them the awe of what's going on. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll put this one away. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.